Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with the Professor, and I'll tell you what, this is going to be an education. I mean, a great education today, because Mike Lombardi, who has been in this league for 30 years, wrote a book, is coming out on September 11th, Gridiron Genius, a masterclass in winning championships and building dynasties in the NFL. And Mike, what a great book to write, because what we're going to go through was what you went through in the book is following what Bill Walsh, Al Davis, and Bill Belichick have done to make themselves some of the best in the game. So congratulations. What got you to do the book?
You know, John, I've been always wanted to write the book. When I was at the Raiders, I took a writing class over in San Francisco, because when I saw the end was coming there and, you know, kind of things were starting to fall apart. And so I thought I needed to really think about a second career. So I went over to San Francisco and I had a weekly, nightly writing class. So I spent a lot of time doing that. And I've always wanted to write. I mean, if you came in my home, I don't have any autographed jerseys. I have a bunch of autographed books. I love writers. And so it's always something I've wanted to do. And, you know, and I've been blessed and truly blessed to work for some of the greatest people in the industry. And starting with Coach Walsh and then meeting Bill Belichick in 1991 and then Al and then coming back with Bill again. So, you know, the book about Gridiron Genius, the title always kind of my publisher like the title. I didn't want anybody to think it's about me. It's about the people I worked with, and that's really what this book's about.
Well, that's the one thing. I mean, in your work in the NFL, you're always behind the scenes. You're always a great student of the game and a great student of people.
Yeah, you know, you have to kind of like – the one thing I was fortunate with was to be able to start my learning experience with Coach Walsh, because that really set the template for everything that I did. And then, you know – knowing Al, and I studied Al a lot when I was a kid because he was the only true personnel executive you could study, and that's what I wanted to do. And then Belichick, you know, and Walsh are so similar. I thought originally about writing a book about just Belichick and Walsh, and I had the title in my head for years. It was called The Bill of Rights, about those two guys. But it just never seemed to flow well enough, and this book seemed to come out of a lot of more experiences.
Well, let's get started with Bill Walsh, because, I mean, he was so unique and he changed the game with what he did on offense, but also the decision making he had in getting the type of players to build those championship teams in San Francisco.
You know, John, I think what people most I think this gets lost in the wash a little bit. Bill Walsh was identified as the West Coast offense, and that's something that he took a lot of great pride in. And it was a divergent thing. You know, people think, well, his West Coast offense was creative and all that. And the reality of it was, is it really wasn't creative. It was divergent. It was taking something that he had to do in Cincinnati and making it into a sustainable offense, because he knew he couldn't run the ball. But what he really stood for, what I think most people missed the boat on, and why that guys that have left him haven't been as successful, is his standard of performance. I mean, that truly is what defined him. And those things that he believed in, the intelligently applied work ethic, the demonstration for respect of another person in the building, character, you know, honor the direct connection between details and improvement. And those things really were what he built the 49ers on. Again, it's all about culture. This book is a lot about culture. This book's about how to build a culture and how to establish a culture and then how to maintain a culture, which is even harder than building one. And so, you know, that was where I learned from him. And as I talk about the book, you know, I borrowed James Corden's carpool karaoke, because I truly had carpool karaoke before it was ever invented. I mean, I drove them everywhere. And, you know, there was no phones in those days, John, in the cars. You and I were old enough to remember the world when we didn't have cell phones. And, you know, and we had to stop at pay phones along the highway, and we all had calling credit cards. And so, you know, I had his full attention, and I would drive him to the airport. I would drive him somewhere else, and he would at sometimes just vent. I never started the conversation. And those lessons were really, really important for my foundation of where I was going. And the one guy that I never have had the opportunity to meet who's made a tremendous impact on my life is Tom Peters, because I can still remember driving up 101 and Bill Walsh looked at me in the car seat next to me in his beautiful Porsche. And he said, "Have you ever read Tom Peters, Michael?" And I said, "Who?" And I thought he was a punter from North Dakota. And, you know, and I said, "No, coach, I've never read him." He said, "You need to read Tom Peters." And it was The Search of Excellence with he and Bob Waterman. And that really set me on this whole path of trying to understand coaching, learning, and leadership.
What did Tom Peters have that Bill Walsh was able to incorporate as far as building that culture?
It was all about how to deal with people, how to improve, constantly work on the things that you had to work on and improve, and not be satisfied with just the status quo. Push the envelope a little bit, which is what he did with the West Coast offense. I mean, remember, John, everybody used to call the West Coast offense a finesse offense, you know, and it really was nothing but, it was not a finesse offense. It was an intelligent offense. And so, and then he was willing to buck the trend. Remember, I mean, you're up in Seattle during those times when the great Chuck Knox, and, you know, it was all about running the ball. And when people started to throw the ball, they were looked down upon on. And Bill was able to be divergent in thought and change the course of the where things were going to go offensively and then defensively. I mean, look, this whole – people forget 1984. We played a Super Bowl against Miami. Miami tried to go no huddle in that Super Bowl to prevent the 49ers from putting on their specialty units, the Fred Dean nickel defense, the Gary Hans Johnson nickel defense, and get their rushers on the field. Miami went no huddle in that game. That was the evolution of substitution football, situational football. And this is why Walsh was so brilliant. He was so far ahead of the curve, and Peters forced it. And it was something he read. And it wasn't just Tom Peters. It was Warren Bennis. It was Peter Drucker, all these great leaders. And he was able to do that, and he kept pushing the envelope. And because of his intellectual power, it created more in the building. And then George Seifert became intellectually stimulated. And then Mike Holmgren became in it. And all of a sudden, you had a Google 1984 version in San Francisco at 711 Nevada Street.
Well, and that's the thing with Bill, because, again, through the 70s, it was all running. I mean, you have quarterbacks like Bob Greasy may only throw 9 to 12 passes a game. It was running and defense. You didn't have nickel cornerbacks or substitutions like that. But because what Bill was able to do both on offense and defense, where he was able to almost put like basketball plays in motion with all the receivers running the different routes and the adjustments, I mean, it totally changed the game. Because, you know, you talk about the NFL now being a quarterback driven league. Well, he was the first one to really drive the quarterback and make it that way.
No doubt. And he did it out of necessity. I mean, he's sitting there in Cincinnati and he's got, you know, no offensive lineman that can knock anybody off the ball. He's got Virgil Carter, who's got a really not a strong arm. And he decided, and this is where I think people really don't understand the difference, to be creative and be divergent. Creative is coming up with something completely different. Divergent is taking something and making it a little bit better. And that's what he did. He took long handoffs and made the game a run game with the pass. And people would call it finesse, but it didn't bother Bill because he knew it was going to work because he could coach it, and that's where he was so successful.
Well, I don't know, even some of the defensive things that he did still carry through. For example, you know, Pete Carroll, who had worked for him, you know, still, because Bill was so good at putting like big veteran defensive tackles out there, kind of some size guys, and that's one of the things that Pete Carroll's tried to master and still continue in there. So that was kind of unique, because obviously you want as many good defensive linemen as possible, but he seemed to have a knack for finding the right type of veterans, maybe a little bit older, that seemed to work so well.
You know, he was, and Belichick's the same way here. I mean, we drafted Charles Haley in 1986. He made a very clear point to Bill McPherson, the defensive line coach. Bill, I don't want you to teach him the entire playbook. I want you to just get him to be a really good nickel rusher. And that's what he did. And so this whole notion that everybody had to learn the playbook from day one, Bill threw that out the window. He knew a rookie couldn't learn the playbook in day one. He used to preach all the time, the first year we're going to develop the skills. The second year we'll develop his skills within the system. That's what he was after, and that's what makes Pete Carroll successful. That's what makes Bill Belichick. That's why guys go to Seattle or they go to New England, and they have a role, and they define the role for them. This is what Walsh did back in the 80s before it was unheard of.
Now, the great part about Bill, I mean, he was almost like a professor type. I mean, he was so intelligent. I mean, his press conferences, it's like going to a class when you would listen to him and do it. I mean, kind of the perfect person for San Francisco, kind of like the Chardonnay. Of course, when you made the move and you get the chance to work with Al Davis, completely different, but still equally successful.
You know, and Al was, you know, first of all, you know, Al was such a part of my study as a kid growing up in New Jersey, because there was nobody really to watch or understand. So I read a lot about Al, as much as you could. And what Al taught us was an incredible way to how to build a football team. You know, Al was about, people forget this, but Al copied the uniforms of the Raiders are from the Detroit Lions silver and the West Point Cadets black. The silver and black are those two things. And the football team is from the Brooklyn Dodgers, the speed of the Dodgers, and they're from the New York Yankees, the power of the Yankees. Those are the two things he wanted. He wanted speed and power. And when his team got off the bus, he wanted to be the biggest team. And so his ability to how he developed teams and built teams was something I learned long before I even went to work for the Raiders. So I kind of understood that. And having spent that time in Cleveland with Belichick, we took a lot of Al's ideas and developed a system of grading players and developed a system of organizational within the player personnel department. A lot of it came from Al. And, you know, whether it was stolen or borrowed, however you want to look at it, we took his ideas and we manifested them into what we believe we needed in Cleveland to be a successful team.
Obviously, Al loved having great, fast players out there. He believed so much in speed at the receiver position. And then, of course, he was willing to take some of the guys that might be character challenges or might be challenges and make it all work together.
Yeah, you know, and I think this is what kind of got him a little bit in the end. I mean, look, the 60s was a different era. The 70s became even a different era. And then the 80s became different. And when you took a guy in the 60s, it was a little different than the guy in the 80s. And I think what we're seeing now, the millennials in this day and age, is a different enterprise. And so Al kind of got caught a little bit with some of the character. And he always felt like we could change a kid. And sometimes you can't change people. You maybe could in the 60s or 70s, but maybe not today. And I think that's what caught up to him in a little bit of the character. He always believed he had enough power and enough control to get a kid to change. But sometimes we would take players that didn't really like football. And when you do that, then that became a problem.
Yeah, but the guys that love football and did so well, I mean, he was able to create so many great things for them. I mean, what were some of the unique things that he did as far as just picking players?
You know, he always had a great eye for defensive linemen. I mean, I learned so much about defensive linemen, how he could evaluate a defensive lineman. Taking Howie Long from Villanova and what he did with him and how he made him into a player and his ability to visualize. Todd Christensen was a running back at BYU, turned him into a tight end. The things that he could do, the development, and what he was able to do was force the coaches to really keep working with the players and make them become player development coaches, not general managers. He used to tell me all the time, don't let the coaches think they're general managers. Make them think they're high school coaches where these are the only players they're going to get. And I think that's really kind of important. And so he was able to do that. And we did that all the time. Rod Coleman was a defensive end at East Carolina. We selected him in the fifth round. Al first wanted to make him an inside linebacker, and then we made him a three technique, and he had just a tremendous career as a three technique. But most people would have never thought he would have been a three technique. But Al saw something in him, and I think that was important. And then his ability to draft corners was certainly in the press era. Now, the rules kind of hurt a little bit because we took away the jams and the illegal contact after 5 yards. But he was so good at picking those defensive players. That's the thing about Al. Everybody associates Al with offensive football, the vertical route, the deep route. Al hated nine routes. He wanted over routes. He wanted routes that the receiver started on one side of the field and ran to the other side of the field, called an over route. And he loved defensive football. I mean, his basic thing in life was defensive football. That's what he was all about, playing defense.
Well, Bill Walsh and Al Davis both had visions. They both had plans. Now we move on to Bill Belichick, because I don't think I've ever seen a coach that can change a plan year to year, change a strategy year to year better than Bill Belichick. And what I mean by that is that it seems like, you know, each year he'll go and look what he has cap-wise, talent-wise, and then adjust. Like, for example, he's on a phase right now where, you know, knowing you don't have as much time with the players as you can, to trade for guys in their third, fourth year in their rookie contracts and try to get use out of them. Is that one of the many unique things about Bill Belichick?
Yeah, you know, he's another divergent thinker. You know, he sits there and it's not just about, I mean, look, the play in the Super Bowl, you know, and I know this is hard for Seattle fans to remember, but that play in the Super Bowl, and I start the book off talking about the play. That play started in March where he wanted a goal line defense with three corners on the field. That was something he wanted. And his vision to think ahead, his vision to anticipate problems. Al Davis had a great saying that the greatness of all organizations isn't their ability to react to problems, but to anticipate problems. This is Belichick to a T. His ability to do that, and then his ability during a game to figure out what he's prepared for and how he can react to it. And I think that's where he makes all his way. And he, in the first quarter, everybody thinks he's in a mad dash in the first quarter to try to you know, who's winning, who's going to, he's in a mad dash to figure out if what we, if the game plan's the right one or if he needs to modify the game plan. That's his whole first quarter emphasis. And that's what makes him so good. And then the players adjust to that. And then once again, like Walsh, he defines the roles for the players. And once they know their role, they fit in, they comply.
What is it when you sit in meetings with him and he's studying personnel, because he'll look at a lot of players around the league, maybe teams and players from teams in the division, and that recognize, okay, if I can get this guy, I can get him to do this and this and this, because he's not asking 100% of what the guy can do. He's taking the strengths of the player, putting him on the field, and then kind of hiding the weaknesses.
No doubt, John. That's what he does so well. I mean, look, Danny Shelton, he gets for basically nothing from the Cleveland Browns, because in Cleveland, he was playing a square-shouldered zero technique at nose tackle. Now, New England will make him a one technique and get him up the field and use that 330-pound body and get him up the field. He'll have a tremendous year this year for him. And it's just because he can figure the role. And this is a Walshism. This is what made Walsh so good. The key to Belichick's success is his ability to understand the scheme and then fit the player to the scheme. Walsh called this scouting inside out, not scouting outside in. Most teams scout outside in. They see a player that they like, and they say, okay, well, the coach can adapt them. What Belichick sees is a skill set that fits his scheme, and then he puts that skill set specifically into the scheme and into the role, and that's what makes it so good. Whether Alan Branch is just at zero technique over the nose or Rob Ninkovich is just coming off the corner, he can fit that in there and work it perfectly, and I think that's what makes him so good, and that's where Walsh was so successful. And its ability to be creative in terms of what he's thinking about, but also adaptable. And that's what's so important.
Well, and that's the one thing that's amazing with him, too, is that he's so far ahead of so many of the coaches in the National Football League. I mean, what? He really develops the slot from what was Mike Leach at Texas Tech, being able to pick up, you know, Wes Welker and have him work out of the slot and evolve that position. You know, he had the Oregon offense before anybody else even thought about it, the Oregon running game, and they were getting 74 plays a game. I mean, he's dug into college and advanced the game itself.
Well, because he's a historian of the game. I mean, you know, one thing Walsh and he had in common was they were constantly looking back, now forward. They were going back and studying the game, and that's what Walsh used to get on the, I used to get on a team bus with Coach Walsh, and he'd be drawing single wing plays. And the same with Belichick. He's going back looking at things. He's a historian of the game. He goes back and studies the game. I mean, look, Pete Carroll's successful offense, defense in Seattle, it goes back to 1984 in the Minnesota Vikings with Floyd Peters and Monty Kiffin and those people there. That's where it all started. And if you understand where it started and you understand how it starts, then you can really adapt to it. You can attack it. You can learn about it. It isn't like you're just doing it on a game-by-game basis. You understand the histrionics of the scheme, and so it allows you to attack it. You know what works and what doesn't work. Whereas people that steal plays now, John, they don't really understand why the play works and why they don't work.
Yeah. Well, the amazing part, too, is because, you know, as much as I love following the personnel trends and all that stuff, I can never guess year to year how he's going to do it, because some years he's going to be, you know, gathering draft picks on compensatory picks. And then other years he's going to be making trades just to get enough veterans to fill it out. How does he make those year to year adjustments?
Well, you know, he's really good, John, at being able to sit down at the end of the year and being critically honest with himself. I mean, he doesn't kid himself into thinking where he is as a football team. Like, he's not lying to himself. You know, the Jackson Brown has a great saying is, you know, in one of his songs, he says, we forget about the losses and exaggerate the wins. Well, Belichick never exaggerates the wins, and he never forgets about the losses. And he's really honest about himself. So when he sits down at the end of the year and he puts his team needs list together, he's really detailed oriented in doing the autopsy of the season, from the off-season to the in-season to practices. And once he figures it all out, then he puts it together. But he doesn't do it until he's done the autopsy of the team. It's not like, okay, we just need a right tackle or we need a left guard or we need this. He's looking at it on a two-year plan, a one-year plan, and then he's able to figure out what he needs specifically and as he moves forward. And then, like right now, I can promise you, he might be in Nantucket on vacation, but he's tinkering and working on what he thinks he needs for his team for the upcoming preseason camp and what players he could use and those kind of things. I tweeted out today, you know, most coaches, you know, take these 4 weeks and take off. And they should. They work hard. But they should take 2 hours a day to work on their craft. because it's a profession that you can't really improve on. Henry Kissinger says in his memoirs, when you go to Washington, you borrow the intellectual power you bring, and you can't renew it once you're there. And that's the NFL. You can't renew your intellectual power when you're in the season. There's no time. You need to use this time right now.
Well, of course, I think what everybody needs to do is use the time this summer to get this book, because Gridiron Genius, a masterclass in winning championships and building dynasties in the NFL by Mike Lombardi, it is a must read, because you can get into the minds of some of the greats. And Mike, of course, tell everybody where you can get the orders on it, because I know it comes out September 11th, but the good part is you can get it now.
You can pre-order it now if you just go to Amazon or you go to my Twitter page. There's a link there that'll take you right to the pre-order, and it'll come out September 11th. And, you know, I hope everybody enjoys it. I enjoyed writing it, so I'm looking forward to sharing this book with everyone.
Well, I hope everybody gets it, because I think it's a must-read. Mike Lombardi, thanks for joining us on Schooled with the Professor.
Thanks, John.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with the Professor.